Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is presented by Tom Grandy. Tom is the founder and president of Grandy & Associates and presents seminars and workshops on labor pricing and cash flow budgeting throughout the trades industry. In addition to seminar presentations, Tom also does one-on-one consulting, writes articles for several trade journals, and is the founder of the Service Contractors Business Tape of the Month. Tom's industrial engineering degree from Virginia Tech in 1970 trained him to see everything from a cost standpoint, therefore giving him a unique perspective of the trades industry. Mr. Grandy has spoken at dozens of national trade conventions, and today will share with us some highlights from his full-day seminar workshop entitled Product and Service Pricing for a Profit.
Before we talk about labor pricing, it'll be helpful to understand how most companies in our industry got started, because probably 80 to 85% of the current owners in our industry used to be a technician working for somebody else. And we worked for them 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and all of a sudden one day, this little light bulb goes off. And the little light bulb basically says this: you know, they've been paying me X number of dollars per hour for who knows how many years, and they've been charging the customer this great big huge amount of money. And you know what? If I went into business for myself, I could charge that high rate and I could make lots of money. So I think about it. A few weeks, a few months, maybe a few years, and all of a sudden one day I make the break. I start my own company. Now normally I start out of my house or garage, very small facility somewhere, normally by myself, maybe with one other person. And my first major problem is this: how much do I charge? Well, that's not really a major problem. I just call all over town. I find out what everybody else is charging. And that's what I charge, or probably a little bit less. And lo and behold, I'm in business. In the first year, 2 years, 3 years, things go along relatively well. I'm making a little bit more money than I did before, even though I'm probably working twice as many hours. But I have the satisfaction of building my own company, and I have a future in front of me. So the first 2, 3, 4 years, things go along relatively well. And then about the 4, 5, 6, 7 year mark, this strange phenomena begins to take place. And the strange phenomena is this: all of a sudden, I seem to be doing more and more and more work, and making less and less and less money. I look at last year, and sales were up 30%. And I made less money than I did the year before. And I find myself scratching my head saying, what in the world is going on? What in the world is going on? I saw a bumper sticker several years ago, and it kind of typifies exactly what I'm talking about. And I want you to listen to it. It's a little humorous, and it's also got a lot of truth in it. And this is what it says. It said, business is so good, that is, I'm just working up a storm, business is so good that I haven't had time to go to the bank, to borrow the money, to pay the rent. Sound familiar? Does to all too many companies today. I mean, we're just working up a storm, and we don't seem to have the ability to pay our bills in the middle of it. Do you know how long it normally takes for a company to even realize it has a serious problem in our industry? To even realize it? I'm not talking about solving it. I'm talking about realizing it. Normally anywhere from 1 to 4 years, not months, years. And typically this is what happens. Things get tough, profits are down a little bit, cash flow begins to get tight. So what's the first thing we do? Well, the first thing we do is more work. I was working 8, 9 hours a day, now we'll work 10 or 12 hours a day. We're working 5 days a week, now we'll work 6 days a week. And what's that do? That puts more cash flow back into my company. Gives me a little bit of breathing room. Helps me for another 6, 12, maybe 18 months, and then I find myself right back in the same situation again. So step two is this. Well, we're continuing to grow. We're bound to be making some money. We're bound to see some of that profit pretty soon. So my second step is, well, the first couple of years I was in business, I put some of that extra profit aside. I'll put that back into the company because tomorrow everything's going to get better. So I put that cash back into the company, gives me a little more breathing room. That helps me another 6, 12, maybe 18 months, and I find myself right back in the same situation again. So my third step is this. We're continuing to grow. We're continuing to get bigger. We're bound to see those profits pretty soon. So what I do is I borrow money on my house. I borrow money on the business, maybe the equipment, and I put that back into the company because tomorrow everything's going to get better. And then after a period of 1, 3, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I don't have anywhere else to draw from, and I find myself scratching my head saying, what's the real problem? What is it I really haven't looked at yet? Now, I want to relate what's going on back to a company that I worked with right after I started business about 10 years ago. And this was a relatively small company, been in business about 4 or 5 years. It was owned and run by 2 young men. One of them basically worked in the office. He pretty much ran the company. He did all the paperwork, the purchasing, the accounting, all that type of thing. And his partner worked out in the field exclusively, and he did everything out in the field. I mean, he ran the other crews. He ran a crew himself. He put all the bid packages together, made all the presentations to the customer. And the fellow out in the field had a major problem, and his major problem was this. Every time he put a bid package together, he was using an hourly rate of $8 an hour for his people. Now, this was several years ago, and back then they were paying basically minimum wage, $2.50, $3, $4 an hour. So he was doubling, sometimes tripling what he was paying his people, calling it professional labor, and putting that as part of his bid package. And because he couldn't justify that $8 an hour figure, every time he made a presentation to the customer, he kind of slid his proposal over the table, and he'd hope they wouldn't ask why it was so high, because he couldn't justify it in his own mind. Now, his partner, the one that worked in the office, had a similar problem, but not quite to the same extent, because he didn't have to work with a customer on a face-to-face basis, on a day-in, day-out basis. So I began to work with the owner, the one who worked in the office. And the first thing we did is the first thing we do with any company is we sat down and we began to put together a month-by-month cash flow budget for the next year to find out what was going to happen. And we built in about a 25% increase in sales, and they've been doing that much or more the last several years in a row. And that meant we had to find out how many more people we were going to have to hire. That meant we had to call the insurance companies and find out what our rates were going to be next year. We had to determine what our marketing program was going to be and how many dollars we were going to spend. When we put everything all together, what we found out was this. If they had a 25% increase in sales the next year and everything went absolutely perfect, everything was right on target, right on budget, with a 25% increase in sales, they'd make about a $5,000 profit. Basically, break even. Now that night, I left the fellow in the office and he met with his partner out in the field, the one that couldn't justify $8 an hour. And they began to go over the numbers one after another over the next several hours. At the end of the evening, the fellow out in the field, the one that couldn't justify $8 an hour, he turned to his partner and this is what he said. He said, I'm not working 60, 70, 80 hours a week, which he was, grossing $300 a week to live off of, which he was, with a 25% increase in sales next year, hoping to break even. He said, that's a bunch of bunk. He said, we're going to $12 an hour tomorrow. And they did. And you know what happened? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. If you don't hear anything else I say the rest of this presentation, I want you to hear this next statement. The fear factor of raising your rates, especially in service, it applies to installation as well, but especially in service, the fear factor of raising your rates is on the part of the company. It's not on the part of the customer. We're all scared to death if we go up 50 cents an hour, our whole customer base is going to run 15 different directions. And I'm here to tell you it will not happen. I have people come to our programs all the time on labor pricing. They come back for cash flow several weeks later. Some have raised their rates anywhere from $1 or $2 to as much as $15, $18 an hour. I haven't had the first problem with their customer base. What the customer is looking for today is 3 things. Number one, quality work. Number two, you did what you said you were going to do. And number three, and probably most importantly, you do it when you said you were going to do it. And if you do those three things, price is not only secondary, but it's way on down the list. Now, the question is not, how much can you charge? The question is, how much do you have to charge to cover your cost of doing business while still generating a profit? Labor pricing, like many things in life, is not that difficult once you understand a few basics. The first basic is to set your labor pricing based on cash flow dollars, not accounting numbers. Let me repeat that. The first basic is to set your labor pricing based on cash flow dollars, not accounting numbers. There are significant differences in cash flow and accounting, and most of you have already experienced them. That is, you met with your accountant the end of the month, the end of the quarter, the end of the year, and normally they come in with a big smile on their face, telling you how much money you made and therefore have to pay taxes on. You, meanwhile, look at your checkbook and ask yourself the question, where is it? If we've made all this profit, why isn't there any money in my checkbook? There are significant differences in cash flow and accounting. Accounting tends to work with paper dollars, while cash flow deals with the real dollars that flow in and out of your company on a daily basis. We want to set hourly rates based on cash flow dollars, so there's money left in our checkbook. Uncle Sam can then decide what he wants to call profit at the end of the year. Calculating what hourly rates you have to charge is relatively straightforward. First, calculate your, quote, real cost of doing business from a cash flow standpoint. Next, calculate your actual billable labor hours to the customer for a year. The third step involves determining your gross profit on materials and how much of that gross profit can absorb some of your overhead. Now, once you know what your real cost of doing business is, then subtract from that the dollars the material gross profit will absorb. You then divide the remaining overhead by the billable labor hours to get your overhead rate per hour. Next, you add your average hourly rate to your overhead rate, add in the profit, and there you have it, your hourly rate. Keep in mind, however, that this process needs to be done on a department-by-department basis, as each department has its own overhead, materials, and billable labor hours. Although the process may not seem all that simple at this point, the real problem is not understanding the process. It's an understanding what your, again, quote, real cost of doing business is, and how many hours you actually charge to the customer. The first thing we're going to do is determine what your real cost of doing business is. The first real cost of doing business we want to talk about from a cash flow standpoint is equipment replacement cost. This takes the place of depreciation in an accounting system and is normally significantly higher than depreciation. Depreciation deals with what a piece of equipment cost years ago when it was purchased, while equipment replacement costs deal with what it will cost you 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line when it needs to be replaced. Every company has at least one piece of equipment, and most of us have several. Someday, each and every piece of equipment we have is going to need to be replaced. The question is not, will it need to be replaced? The question is, how are you going to pay for it when it is replaced? Most of us have been told over the years that we're going to buy new equipment out of the profits of our company. The reality, however, is that most of us do not generate enough profit to cover our equipment replacement costs, much less have anything left over. Ask yourself, how did you pay for that last vehicle? Did you pay for it with cash, which probably meant you had the cost built into your pricing, or did you buy it on a loan? If we don't build the equipment replacement cost into our pricing, it will never get covered. Calculating equipment replacement cost is simple. You simply look at each piece of major equipment you currently own and ask yourself, how many more years will it last you before you need to replace it? The next question is, how much will it cost X number of years from today? For example, Let's assume we have a 1992 Chevy van. Our best estimate is it'll last us about 3 more years and will cost us about $21,000 to replace it. We'll then take the $21,000, divide it by our 3 remaining years. That will produce a cost of $7,000 a year that we need to build into our overhead and therefore into our hourly rate. Back in my hometown of Owensboro, Kentucky, there's a dentist, and his name is Roby Crowe. And I want to tell you a little story about Roby, which will directly relate back to equipment replacement cost. Now, I've been going to Roby for almost 20 years now. I go down there every 9 months to have my teeth checked. And every time I go in, I go through the same scenario. I usually sit down out in the lobby for a few minutes, and then the dental assistant comes back. She takes me back to her office, and she'll spend the next 15 to 45 minutes cleaning my teeth, flossing my teeth, fluoriding my teeth, getting them all looking really sharp so that Roby can come in and take a look at them. Roby always comes in. He says, "Open your mouth, Tom." I'm open my mouth. He looks inside, and he tells me the same thing every year. And you know what it is? He says, "Tom, you have not been flossing your teeth." He says, "Tom, you need to floss your teeth." And for some unknown reason, I always say, "But why, Roby?" And then he goes through his 5 to 10 minute scenario. He says, "Tom, if you don't floss your teeth," that is, if you don't build equipment replacement cost into your pricing, said, "if you don't floss your teeth, certain things are going to happen to you. Said, if you don't floss your teeth, you're going to have gum problems. If you don't floss your teeth, you may lose your teeth. They may fall out. It's going to become painful to you, and sooner or later, it's going to become very expensive." He says, "Tom, you need to floss your teeth." Well, I tell you, when I leave his office, I am scared to death. Sometimes I'll go 2 full weeks after leaving his office before I stop flossing. But I always stop. Now why? Why would I stop flossing? The reason is I haven't experienced what he's told me yet. My teeth don't hurt. I haven't lost any teeth yet. I'm not experiencing great pain, and it hasn't cost me anything significant in terms of dollars yet. But if I don't do something about it, if I don't start flossing my teeth, I'm going to experience what he's talking about. Now, about 3-4 years ago, my wife called me one day at the office, and she said, "Tom, guess what you got in 2 weeks?" I said, "What?" She said, "A dentist appointment." Guess what I did the next 2 weeks? You're right. I flossed my teeth in the morning, I flossed them at noon, I flossed them at night, and sometimes I flossed them 3-4 times a day. For 2 full weeks. I was going to be ready for Roby this time. Came the day of the appointment. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning. I didn't go straight to his office. I went back to the house. I brushed my teeth. I flossed my teeth. I was ready for Roby this time. Went back to his office. We went through the regular routine with the dental assistant. Roby comes in. I'm all smiles. He says, "Open your mouth, Tom." Open my mouth. He looks inside. And you know what he said? He said, "Tom, you haven't been flossing your teeth." See, I couldn't make up for in 2 weeks what I hadn't done for 9 months. And it's the same situation with our equipment replacement cost. If I buy a new truck today that's going to last me 10 years, and let's say it costs $20,000, that means I got to build $2,000 a year into my pricing. Well, what if I now have waited several years, let's say I waited 5 years, now I've only got 5 years left, now I got to build in $4,000 a year. Or maybe I've ignored it for 8 years, so I've got 2 years before I need to replace that equipment. Now I got to build in $10,000 a year. To see how it begins to affect my pricing? Now, before you can begin to make a list of your equipment for your particular company, we need to look at a couple of unique situations because they may affect you. First of all, do you lease equipment? Now, if you're currently leasing equipment, do not put that piece of equipment on our equipment replacement list. Why? Because the cost is already there. It's real. You're paying the bill each month. Hopefully you've got it written down as an overhead cost. It's a real cost of doing business and you see it. Hopefully you're accounting for it already. The second unique situation many of you may find yourself in, and that is we've got a loan we're paying on a current piece of equipment right now, but we're going to turn right around and we're going to build it in as an equipment replacement cost. That mean my cost is in there twice? It sure does. I'm paying off my existing loan, plus I'm funding for the replacement of that new piece of equipment later on. A third situation you may find yourself in is that you have one or more pieces of equipment that you need to replace immediately. Now, when I say immediately, I'm talking about sometime over the next 12 months. Now, think for a moment. If I had three trucks and I've got to replace all three of them this next year, and each one's going to cost me $20,000 a piece, what would happen to my hourly rate if I built $60,000 into it this next year? Well, it'd be right out the roof. My hourly rate would be unrealistically high. And the next year, it would be unrealistically low because the equipment replacement cost wouldn't be there. So any piece of equipment that I'm going to replace over the next 12 months, we want to spread that cost over at least 3 years, just from a common sense standpoint, to even out our labor pricing. So we come up with a realistic figure. Now, we only want to include items of significant value on our list, normally over $1,000. And we also want to possibly, and this is an option, you may want to include the purchase of additional pieces of equipment later on. Now, what I mean by an additional piece of equipment, maybe we got two trucks out in the field right now, but according to our business plan, 3 years from today, we're going to have a third crew. That third crew is going to need a truck. So if you want to build that third crew's truck into today's pricing so that 3 years from today you have the cash to buy that piece of equipment, you can do that. That's optional. Obviously, it's going to make your hourly rate a little bit higher, but it's something that you can do if, in fact, you'd like to. Equipment replacement costs are very real costs of doing business, and they're very large costs of doing business. And if we don't build it into our pricing, it will never get covered. Equipment replacement costs, however, are only one of our real costs of doing business. Our next real cost of doing business deals with field labor, and more especially, the cost of non-billable time. Before we can do that, however, we need to be sure that we understand the terms field labor and non-billable time. The term field labor describes the technician who's on the job for whose time we can charge directly to the customer. This is the tech who's doing the installation job and or the service call, as opposed to someone who works in the office. If you're a small company and the owner works in the field, then the owner would be considered field labor. If the owner spends half his time in the field and half his time in the office, then he would be considered field labor half the time, and the other half of his cost would go into overhead. The term non-billable time refers to the time that you pay field labor for that you cannot charge the customer for directly. We will, of course, charge the customer indirectly for that time. Non-billable time covers things like vacation pay, holidays, sick pay, shop time, or travel time from point to point. Non-billable time is any time that the company pays for that they cannot charge a customer for directly. It's not necessarily non-productive time, however. The tech may be helping put up stock or working on a truck. That time is productive, but it's non-billable in the sense that it can't be charged directly to the customer. The question, of course, is what is real non-billable time? Again, let's look at an example. Let's assume you pay 2 weeks of vacation. Some of you more than that, some of you less. You can adjust it for your company. But let's assume you pay 2 weeks of vacation. That's 80 hours a year, or 3.8% of their total time that's non-billable. If you offer 9 paid holidays, and again, some of you have more or less than that, but if you offer 9 paid holidays, that's another 72 hours a year, or an additional 3.5% of their total time that's non-billable. And if you allow 5 sick days, guess how many sick days will be taken? That's right, 5. Well, that's another 40 hours a year, or an additional 1.9% of their total time that's non-billable. That means simply vacations, holidays, and sick pay amounts to a total of 9.2% of their total time that's non-billable. If they came to work every other day, if they worked 8 hours, and if you could charge a customer all 8 hours, which isn't going to happen. What's the best you can hope for? Let's take a model employee. Again, let's assume this model employee will only have, on the average, 1 hour a day that's non-billable. That's 1 hour a day over the remaining 47 working weeks that aren't holidays, vacation, or sick pay. And it amounts to 235 hours a year, or an additional 11.3% of their total time that's non-billable. That's for 1 hour a day. If we add up vacations, holidays, sick pay, and 1 hour a day, that totals 20.5% non-billable time for our best employee. What's normal? Industry averages show that the average service technician has 40 to 55% non-billable time, while installation crews average about 20 to 35% non-billable time. As you may have guessed at this point, non-billable time is the single largest cost of doing business a company has. Normally, it's more than rent, more than insurance, more than equipment replacement cost, or any other single overhead cost. To calculate your company's cost of non-billable time, estimate the number of hours that are non-billable for each field labor employee and multiply it by their base hourly rate. That means if you have a service technician with 45% non-billable time and they're paid an hourly rate of $12 an hour, your cost of non-billable time for that one employee is $11,235 for the year, not counting their matching taxes. It doesn't take a lot of imagination to think what that cost would be if you had 5, 10, 15, or 20 employees. Now, if you would, I'd like for you to kind of visualize here for a moment a great big empty warehouse. And in this warehouse, there's hundreds and hundreds of tables out there, and on top of each table, there's a sewing machine. And this is a manufacturing plant, and they make clothing. And one day, management's sitting around in one of their meetings, and they say, you know, we'd like to find some way to increase productivity and therefore the profitability of our company. And they decide to hire an outside consultant. So they bring him in, and they said, what we'd like you to do is we'd like for you to spend 2 weeks out in the plant. We want you to look over everybody's shoulder. We want you to look at the environment. We want you to check our methods of operation. And at the end of 2 weeks, we want you to come back and tell us what we can do to increase productivity and therefore the profitability of our plant. So the consultant goes out. He spends 2 weeks out in the plant. He's out there all day, every day. He's looking over everybody's shoulder. He's looking at the environment. Everybody out in the plant knows why he's there. He's out there to find some way to increase productivity and therefore the profitability of the plant. At the end of his 2 weeks, he comes back to management and he says, now this is what I recommend. He said, it's too dark out there. He said, if you'd put in more lighting, say 50% more lighting, people could see better. And if they could see better, they'd be more productive, and if they're more productive, you'd be more profitable. So they do. They go out and they put in 50% more lighting. They're checking the efficiency chart, and sure enough, productivity has increased. Well, 2, 3, 4 months go by, and they decide to call this same consultant back in a second time. Same charge. We want him to spend 2 more weeks out in the plant. Again, we want him to look in the environment, talk to the people, see how we do our things out there, and come back and make a second recommendation on what we can do to increase productivity and therefore the profitability of the company. So he does. He goes out and he spends 2 more weeks out in the plant. He's looking over everybody's shoulder. He's watching them come in the morning. He's watching them leave in the afternoon. He's watching them go on breaks. At the end of his 2 weeks, he comes back to management, and this is his recommendation. He said, you know, before I told you to put in 50% more lighting, and that was good. But you know what? It's still kind of dark out there. If you'd put in some more lights, people could see even better. And if they could see better, they'd be more productive. Well, management wasn't quite so sure this time. But they went ahead and they put in some more lighting anyway. And they're watching the productivity chart, and sure enough, it's increased again. Well, about 6 months goes by, and one day management's having another one of their meetings, and they're talking to each other, and they said, you know what? Why don't we go out in the plant? There's 7 of us. Why don't we go out there and we'll look at the environment. We'll talk to the employees. We'll make our own recommendations. So they do. All 7 of them go out in the plant. I mean, they're out there before startup time. They're watching the employees come in. They're checking their watch. They're seeing what time they go on break, what time they come back from break. They're out there like little flies all over that place. And every employee knows why they're out there. They're out there to find some way to increase productivity and therefore the profitability of the plant. Well, after they'd finished their 2 weeks, they were back in the office talking to one another. They said, you know, I'm not sure what we are going to do, but one thing we're definitely going to do is we're going to get rid of some of those lights out there. It's too bright. So they do. They take out a bunch of the lights, they're watching the productivity chart, and guess what? Productivity has increased again. The moral of the story is this. If you will simply begin to track your non-billable time. Now, that can be as simple as a time card that has one column for billable time and another one that says non-billable. Or it can be as sophisticated as some companies have gotten where they literally have the technician call in when they get to the house or the business, call in when they leave, and they track it all back at the office. Doesn't matter how you do it. If you'll simply begin to track your non-billable time, I promise you, productivity will increase. Will some of it be fudged? Sure. Some of it will be fudged. Some of it will be real. Let me give you a very real-life example of what I'm talking about. Several years ago, I was the general manager of a service company, and the owner basically ran the crews and scheduled the work out in the field. And we did custom trim work on homes. And normally, we'd have 3 to 5 people on a crew, and we'd spend roughly a week on a house. And every morning, we had all of our crews come into the office. And they would spend, anywhere from 10 minutes, sometimes as much as 45 minutes before they went out on the job. Lots of non-billable, costly time. So one day the owner came in and said, Tom, I got an idea. He said, what I'd like to do is have the crews report directly to the job rather than coming to the office. I said, fine. So he met with each one of the crews and he said, from now on, we want you to report directly to the job site. We want you to be there ready to go to work at 7 o'clock in the morning. We want you to break for lunch from 12 to 12:30, and we want you to pack up and leave 3:30 in the afternoon. Does everybody understand that? Everybody understood. Everything went fine for about 2 weeks. Then we started getting phone calls. Mr. Jones would call, aren't you guys supposed to be here at 7 o'clock in the morning? Yes, sir. Well, it's 7:35. Nobody showed up yet. I'll check on that. Mrs. Jones would call later on in the day or some other day. And say, aren't you guys supposed to break for lunch from 12 to 12:30? Yes. Well, they left about 11:45 and it's almost 1 and they're not back yet. I'll check on that. Somebody else would call. Aren't you guys supposed to quit at 3:30 in the afternoon? Yes. Well, it's 3:15 and they're gone. So I called the owner in and we started talking things over and said, you know, what's going on? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, I'm getting all these phone calls from customers saying the guys aren't on the job. I said, aren't you supervising the crews? He said, well, sure I am. I said, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm checking on every crew every day, about 10 o'clock. Well, guess who's working every day at 10 o'clock? You're right, every single one of those crews. And then he changed his ways. Then he started checking on every crew every day, maybe twice today, 5 times tomorrow, 2 times the next day. Sometimes he'd come at 8:30 in the morning. Sometimes he'd come at 12:30. Sometimes he'd come at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He'd be back at 3:15. They didn't have the faintest idea how often he was coming or what time of day he was going to be there. And guess what happened to productivity? You know, when profits get tight, cash flow gets low, what's the first thing we normally do in our company? We start going through the overhead costs. Let's turn the thermostat down 5 degrees. That'll save us $10 a month. Let's cut back on our office supplies, and we go through all the different overhead costs, reducing them as much as possible. And that's good, and that's right, and we need to do that. But the single largest potential area of savings in your entire company is a whole area of non-billable time. Now, typically, a 2-, 3-, 4-man operation out in the field is going to have somewhere between $30,000 and $50,000 a year in non-billable time. Every dollar you save from non-billable time goes directly to the bottom line in terms of profits. So if you had $50,000 a year worth of non-billable time and you could reduce that by just 10%, that means you just made $5,000 profit for your company. Not reduced cost, profit. So spend your time, spend your energy finding ways to reduce your non-billable time. You'll never get rid of it, but try to reduce it as much as possible. Another significant cost of doing business is the whole area of loans. The way loans are handled represents one of the major differences in cash flow and accounting. If you have a $500 loan payment and $100 of it is interest and $400 of it's principal, the only thing that shows up on an accounting income statement is the $100 interest. The $400 in principal simply goes off to Never Never Land. But the difference in accounting and cash flow can literally mean the difference in being profitable or not. Let me give you an example. Last summer I was working with a company one-on-one, and the first thing we did was look at their income statement. The statement showed an interest figure of about $3,000 for the year, with a net profit for the company of about $35,000. It didn't look too bad until we got into the details of his business, and we found that he had several loans. Now remember, the interest portion of the income on the income statement showed about $3,000. Guess what? His total loan payments for the year, principal and interest, totaled $62,000. That's a difference of $59,000. From an accounting standpoint, he was making a $35,000 profit. But from a cash flow standpoint, real dollars, he was losing $24,000 a year. Be sure, when you're adding up your overhead costs, that you include the full amount of the loan payment, principal and interest. Can make a significant difference both in your hourly rate and your overall profitability. Most of your other overhead costs are pretty straightforward. Things like rent, utilities, insurance, gasoline, uniforms, etc. To come up with the real cost of doing business, however, be sure to include your loan payment, principal and interest, your equipment replacement cost, and your cost of non-billable time. When you add all this up, plus your company matching taxes, you will have your, quote, real cost of doing business for your company. The next question is how much of this big lump of overhead will the gross profit on the sale of our materials or parts absorb? Let's assume for a moment we want to generate a 15% pre-tax net profit in our service department. The normal average markup for service parts is usually around 100%. To keep it simple, let's assume we buy a part for $10, so we sell it for $20. If we want a 15% net profit on the material, 15% of that $20 is $3. Our remaining gross profit on the sale of the part will therefore be our selling price of $20, less our cost of $10, less our 15% profit, which is $3, which leaves us $7. The $7 is then available to absorb some of our overhead. If we take our total overhead and subtract from it the excess gross profit on the sale of materials, the remaining overhead has to be carried by our actual billable labor hours to the customer. To get our overhead rate per hour, we'll take the remaining overhead after materials has absorbed some of it and divide it by our billable labor hours. Our break-even rate is then the sum of the average field hourly rate plus the overhead rate we just came up with. The final step in developing our hourly rate is to add in profit. Let's assume that our average field labor rate was $12 an hour and our overhead rate came out to $33 an hour. That will give us a break-even rate of $12 plus 33 or $45 an hour as our break-even rate. To generate a 15% profit on our hourly rate, we would then take our break-even rate of $45 an hour and divide it by 0.85. The 0.85 is the number we come up with if we take 1 or 100% and subtract the profit we want to make, which in our case is 15%. That makes our hourly rate $45 divided by 0.85 or $52.94. per hour. When you find out what you have to charge, charge it. Don't be afraid to. Remember the first thing we said today, the fear factor of raising your rates is on the part of the company. It's not on the part of the customer. Worked with a glass company in Cincinnati, Ohio several years ago. One of the things they did is if you had a broken windshield in your car, they would drive to your house, replace your windshield, go back. It would take them about an hour, two people. They'd charge you $20. When we went through the process that you and I just talked about, we found out that his hourly rate should have been $30 per hour per man. Left the company, he called me 2 weeks later and said, "What'd you do?" He said, "Well, I went to $30 per hour per man the next day after you left." And I took a big gulp and I said, "What happened?" He said, "Nothing." So, but for the first time in 14 years, I'm making money at what I'm doing. Excellent quality company, top reputation in town, but he wasn't priced where he could make a profit at it. If you know anything about the continuous gutter industry, if you get five quotes from six different companies or whatever, every one of them will be almost identical. There's not 2% difference in any price you'd get on getting continuous gutter work done. Went through this process with a company in Portland, Oregon that has a continuous gutter company. When they were through, they had two options. They could close their doors or they could raise their rates 20%. They chose to raise their rates 20%. You know what happened? Within 4 months, every other continuous gutter company in town had raised their rates right up to where they were. That often happens. I've got a plumber who's worked for me at my house for about 15 years now. Small operation, works out of his house, got one other guy that works with him. But for the first 13 and a half years that he did work for me, he charged me $25 an hour. 13 and a half years, no increase. A year and a half ago, he came out to my house, did a small job in the basement. He's normally a very calm, cool, collected individual. He came upstairs, and I've never seen such a nervous wreck in my life. I mean, he was fidgeting, he was walking, he couldn't look me straight in the eye, and finally got up enough courage, he stopped right in front of me, looked me right between the eyes, said, "I apologize, Tom." I said, "What for?" He said, "I've had to raise my rates to $28 an hour." Now, do you think I went out and got a new plumber? No. I mean, he's been doing work for me for 13 years. I didn't care what he charged. He does what he said he's going to do, when he said he's going to do it. Now, you know what happened 6 months ago? He came out and did some more work for me. You know what he charged me this time? $36 an hour, and he never blinked an eyelash. And you know what? Neither did I. Because he does top quality work. I call him. He's there when he said he's going to be there. Now, you can throw everything out so far that we've done and ask yourself one question, and it'll tell you whether your pricing is basically right or not. And that one question is this: where are you paying your bills from this month? If your pricing is right, you should be paying this month's bills from profits you made 1 to 2 months ago. If you're hoping to do enough work this month to pay this month's bills, basically it says, "Hey, I'm breaking even. I'm not making money. I'm not losing money. I'm just kind of in limbo." If you have started that 1 to 4 year process we talked about first thing of putting money back into the company because tomorrow everything's going to get better, guess what? It's not going to get better. Find out what you need to charge and charge it. Don't be afraid to. Keep in mind the fact that any and every decision you make inside your company will affect the profitability of your company. If you add an overhead cost, purchase a truck, hire an employee, it will affect your profitability. One of two things will happen. Either you're going to absorb the cost and therefore reduce your profitability, or you're going to pass that cost on to the customer in the form of an hourly rate increase. One of those two things will happen. What we want to learn to do is to think before we make the changes. We need to understand that any and every change in our company will affect your hourly rate and therefore your profitability. Developing an hourly rate that will cover all your real costs of doing business while generating profit is the most important thing you will ever do in your company. Let me repeat that. Developing an hourly rate that will cover all your real costs of doing business while generating a profit is the most important thing you will ever do in your company. You can have the best people, the sharpest trucks, the best quality work in town, but if you're not priced right, you'll go out of business. Let me leave you with one very simple but very profound thought, and this is it. If you want different results, you have to do things differently. That's profound, isn't it? If you want different results, you have to do things differently. You can go to every seminar, listen to all the tapes, and hire the best consultants in the industry. But if you don't eventually wind up doing something differently, nothing will change.
We hope this edition of the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month has given you many new ideas to help you run your company more effectively. Along with this month's tape, you also received several other things. There is a short summary of the tape you just heard, a brief outline of the program for quick review, and you will also find a customer response card enclosed. There is a place on the card for your comments on this tape, as well as space for suggestions you would like to make for topics on future tapes. The response card is postage paid, so please write down a few comments and drop it in the mail. We would love to hear from you. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.